Hello everyone. Welcome to the FinHub, a Canadian founders podcast, where we do a deep dive with founders of today's leading fintechs. My name is Priyanka Vashisht, and I am your co-host and a first-year MBA student at Rotman School of Management. In this episode, I had the pleasure to talk to Sue Brighton and Surinderjeet Kaur Bhatti. Sue and Surinderjeet are both co-founders of Fathom Foresight, a fintech knowledge-as-a-service platform that provides market intelligence and advisory solutions to fintech institutions in Canada. Surinderjeet has an extensive background within the lending space with a master's in innovation, while Sue has worn many hats as an advisor, entrepreneur, and partner at various fintech platforms and has served on the Fintech Advisory Board to the Global Affair Canada. In this episode, we talked about what knowledge as a service means, fintech adoption in Canada, how one can navigate the fintech space, and much more. So I hope you enjoy the show. Sue and Surinderjeet, it's so nice to have you on the show. Welcome. How are you guys doing today?
We're amazing. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great. I was pausing to try and make sure that I don't hog the mic as I usually do with Jade, if you've listened to any of our podcasts. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're very excited to have you both on board. So I would start with you, Sue. Over the years, you worked in, you know, leadership roles with SimCorp, Broadridge, and Finastra. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your journey so far in the fintech industry.
Yeah, I suppose I've worked for, you know, companies that I would now think of as fintech incumbents that when I was working there, I don't even think fintech was a thing. But, you know, the technology that enabled financial institutions to do what they do. And I was always really curious about, I got a little bit of this from my first job, which thankfully did not become my career, which was with the Four Seasons. And I, you know, kind of learned some things that stuck with me about listening to customers. And, you know, frankly, in the old days, I don't know if it's the case anymore, but at Four Seasons, you know, we used to joke that, like, if somebody asked you for a pickle sandwich on whole wheat bread, you would go find it. Like, you never said no. And so I've got a little bit of that in me, and I have taken that approach with my career. And so I've gravitated towards roles that let me do that. Mm-hmm. Now I think we'd probably call that innovation in a way, because for me, those things that they ask for are usually great indications of the needs that they have. And so we usually, you know, are able to turn those into products.
That's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us. And Surinderjeet, before joining Sue, you worked in India as a fintech analyst and at an online lending platform. And then you did your master's in innovation. What got you interested in the fintech industry initially?
Wow, I must say you do your research pretty thoroughly. I think I stumbled into fintech and there was some bit of interest. So I think it started around like 2013-14 when fintech was just starting up in India and wallets had just kind of started picking up some pace with Paytm being the one. And then at that time, there were a few others who are not as well known in India right now because the tech giants have taken over. I think that's where my interest grew into it. And then when I went for my first job, it was luck or whatever. I started working with the fintech team and eventually led the team. I think, yeah, that sort of led to my journey here. I did work with one of the biggest financial institutions in India on their online lending platform, which kind of gave me insights, I think, as to how these actually work versus really understanding the market. So how Right. does fintech actually work and how do you enable that? So yeah, it's been quite a journey, but I think it's full circle now with Fathom Foresight.
And speaking of Fathom Foresight, you both are now the co-CEOs of the company, which works within the fintech research and consulting space. And that's really exciting for you both. And congratulations. How would you describe what your company does?
So I'm actually hesitating because I was going to say, you know, Jean and I met over 3 years ago and I'm pretty fortunate that she actually reached out. It was like probably one of the biggest compliments in my sort of 6 years as the founder of FGS, the company that I launched in the end of 2015. And then just with the co-founding of Fathom Foresight, FGS is no longer, but Jeet was doing her master's at Queen's on innovation and entrepreneurship. And she reached out on LinkedIn. And we got to know each other over LinkedIn. And the first time I met her, I hired her on the spot. And so we actually have worked together for 3 years before founding Fathom Foresight. And it's a blend of both of our passions to, you know, number one, provide a new offering in the market, which is a platform that provides knowledge, but as a service. So, you know, where we can help those who are getting involved in financial product innovation, even the most, you know, savvy still have trouble keeping track of what's happening, and interpreters of, you know, the opportunities and risks. And so it's a platform called Fathom Foresight, and we have a few different ways you can access the platform. And our hope is that we're also, you know, bridging the large consulting firms with big, big projects and data platforms. We think there's this need for this assisted service.
You talked about knowledge as a service. Just for people who probably don't know much about this space, what does knowledge as a service mean to you both? I think, Surinderjeet, you can start off. And how do you guys think that this space will impact the financial services industry in Canada?
Well, we think it's going to make a big, big change. Well, I think we are small but mighty. We have strong ambitions with this platform. As Sue said, we are trying to bridge a gap, which we think is huge in the market. People need access to knowledge, and they need fast, considering how quickly the, not just fintech ecosystem, I'm going to say financial industry is moving in Canada. It's a catching up game right now if you don't have access to the information, and decisions need to be taken on, like, in order for them to be really strong and have impact on the lives of Canadians in a better way. They need to be based on what's happening, like a well-informed knowledge of what's happening in the ecosystem and what really needs to be launched in the market. So we are helping the ecosystem understand what's happening in the ecosystem and what are some of the trends and insights in different areas of financial industry. So we, through this platform, we really categorize all the knowledge into these bundles, I would say. I don't want to disclose a lot about the platform right now, but we are trying to make it easy and sort of a self-serve kind of model where people can come in and access different knowledge bundles as per their need, basically, and when they need it, so that they don't have to engage a research firm or a consulting firm for every little thing that they need in order to make their day-to-day decisions even, right? So that's what I think knowledge as a service is. And I think we believe that such a platform or such a service is very new and disruptive, and it's something that not a lot of players have ventured into. So it's something new, and we are trying to pioneer that in a big, big way.
Definitely. I think, you know, your platform really would help a lot of the new startups kind of understand, because there's so much going on in the fintech space that it can be hard to navigate and understand where you are positioned as a company. So it's amazing what you guys are doing, and it's definitely very disruptive. Sue, you talked about how Canada is lagging in fintech adoption a few years ago. How have you seen that change over the years?
Well, you know, the fortunate and unfortunate part of like a pandemic where we all have restrictions on how we can access things has really just made the adoption of anything digital exponential. And so I think, you know, 2-3 years ago, there was probably still some hesitancy in, you know, our banks or our credit unions or frankly the regulators about the impact that fintech is going to have now. I think the adoption of multiple new products is clearly there in the Canadian market. Some of them really well-known names like Wealthsimple, or even frankly, not necessarily fintechs today, but very quickly becoming sort of brands that are offering financial products like Shopify and Square. Like, we wouldn't say Shopify was a fintech, but yet more businesses in Canada have been getting working capital through Shopify's capital product than they have as a percentage, probably from the banks. And I think we'll see that grow very rapidly. Like, any adoption curve hit a point where you're on a pretty fast ramp up. And of course, it's really pushing that too. In addition to the pandemic, right, there's also regulatory change coming in Canada that is, it is happening as opposed to it could happen. So we're going to see a regulation and opening up of our payment systems to new competitors. So new regulation that will really open up the banking market to competitors through the sharing of consumer and small business data. So I wish I could give you a percentage, but I can say, we've got to be at a stage now where everybody has a fintech product in their phone, like an app or something. And the last thing I'll say is just on that, the other piece of evidence that's pretty strong that maybe Jeep can weigh in on is just the incredible amount of capital, whether it's venture capital or equity or debt financing, just huge amount of money going into fintechs. And I think it's, Toronto was one of the biggest centers of fintech funding. I can't remember what the stat is, but so lots going on and all going in the right direction from an innovator's point of view anyway.
What about you, Sundarjeet? What is your perspective on this?
I think, like, I would definitely, to Sue's point, funding says something about a sector. And I read this a couple of days ago that fintech is eating everything, which is true. Everybody is trying to come into the fintech space, no matter what industry you are in. We are seeing e-commerce players, tech giants, retailers, like you name a company and they would have some digital financial product, or if not, they would have partnered with a fintech to offer it to their customers. So when we are in a situation where on the demand side, the consumer really wants it, and on the supply side, people are eager to get into the space, it's definitely going to grow. I think Canada was a little bit behind, but the amount of activity and launch of fintechs that we've seen in just last 6 months, it's crazy. We track through our platform the trends and insights and also how many fintechs are in Canada. Right. It's been, I can't even say, like, how, like, it's just shocking to see not just investment, but the number of new fintechs coming in from other countries to Canada, which kind of indicates towards boom in the space.
I mean, when you're talking about this big boom that's happening in the space right now, where do you guys see a focus on within the ecosystem? Is there a particular focus within payments? Is there a particular focus within lending? Or is it just like an amalgamation of everything?
So I think payments is such, sort of the nature of payments is that it's underlying everything. So payments is definitely growing. But the other sectors sort of see spikes. So right now we are literally in the spike where NFTs and crypto is seeing a lot of activity. There was a time when lending and new lending, digital lending platforms were seeing a lot of traction, a lot of money flowing into them. So those spikes are pretty normal and kind of shows where the money is flowing to a certain extent in terms of venture capital funding. But overall, payments is definitely the space that is seeing a lot of activity. And as I said, it's the nature of payments and it's the easiest sector to get into, especially with the ease to probably partner with a fintech to launch your credit card or launch your prepaid product or wallet. It's relatively easy to get into, wherein lending involves a lot more work and there's a risk involved in lending. And some of the other models are also tough to get into, investments and others. So payments is easy. And that's kind of a gateway for new entrants to enter the space. And then they're just expanding. We have seen a lot of players that have just expanded to a whole suite of financial products. And they might have just started with a prepaid card.
When you spoke about how COVID has impacted a lot of how businesses function nowadays and how we as consumers behave and how we purchase. I just wanted to understand, how have you seen fintech companies navigate, you know, this transition and these challenges that they've been faced with during the past 2 years?
I think there were some challenges that every startup had. You suddenly, everybody's remote and how you kind of manage all that. Plus, there was and is still a lot of need for some basic fintech or payment-related products, and startups that were in those categories, they did see a lot of spike and they had to hire quickly to ensure that they launch. And I don't know how many, like every single startup that we've had over past few podcasts, every single one of them is hiring, looking for talent at this point.
Yeah. Hiring in droves. I actually think like one of the things that launching Fathom Foresight has allowed Jeet and I to do is to really take a step back a bit in a much more strategic way. One of the challenges with consulting is, the good thing is you go really deep and it's a lot of people and you're doing research, but it's like, it's custom. It's very custom to a specific sort of situation. Whereas when you take a step back and you look at the fintech market, like, we're doing diagnostics on different parts of the finances, like retail banking and competition, just for that retail banking consumer's business. You know, I would say both in retail banking and more so the small business banking, competition is fierce in Canada. There's more money moving out of our deposit accounts. But when you look at it, sort of the flip side of that is like those fintechs that enable banks to do some of this, that are technology companies or data, you know, AI solutions, things like that, the banks still have so much legacy infrastructure that they have to modernize. And then if you flip and look at wealth management, like we have this thing, we Fathom Arc of Innovation, like, the robo-advisor trend kind of came and went, and the winner of it in Canada was Wealthsimple, at least from a who's still standing as a direct competitor. But then having said that, all the other, you know, robo-advisors that came got either bought or had very strategic partnerships like Nest Wealth and RBC. But that's the tip of the iceberg in wealth management. Like, nobody has really solved the distribution of, you know, products to consumers. Nobody's really solved the wealth transfer and the next generation of investors that are probably going to be super successful with NFTs and crypto. But I think it's just the shift in the market right now is just phenomenal. And it's pretty exciting, even though we've got a lot of really other, you know, sort of scary things happening in the world.
Yeah,
it's a bit controversial here and say like working is almost more exciting because it's like it's there's just so much going on and there's so much to, you know, kind of sink your teeth into and understand.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about even open banking nowadays in Canada. How do you see that changing how the financial services industry functions here?
I mean, open banking is already here because we already share our data. We just don't do it safely. So open banking is this idea that it should be done with consent and through more secure fizz, and that there should be some regulation around it. And frankly, if you're a business, when you share your data with your accounting provider, the links break and it's just a pain. So that will all get fixed. But it's so much more than that. Like, open banking to me is completely transforming the distribution of financial products. So we won't be talking about branches and ATMs and anything else. We'll be talking about, I actually just moved all my financial business to, I don't know, Corner Shop. I've talked about Corner Shop a lot. Jeet will laugh at me about that. But it's kind of like an Instacart, but way cooler. And I can buy anything I want on it. And I'm sure at some point, you know, some sort of payment card with loyalty and cash and everything else. But, you know, like people don't have time to spend on anything really. Like we're all really trying to sort of, you know, become way more efficient with how we spend our time. And I think our super apps really, you right. know, change the game. I think open banking is kind of the beginning of the journey to the super app, or certainly to the you know, distribution of actually a bank exec to use this terminology called the new battleground for the brands. Mm-hmm. Whether that brand is a bank or whether that brand is a retailer or your point of sale terminal provider.
The super app launch or whatever in Canada would be super interesting. Super interesting for super app. But I think, when I categorize it, it'll be to two sort of ways. One would be distribution, which is more towards super app, be it your own product or you are enabling the distribution probably of a competitor's product by giving consumer a choice. So distribution of products will definitely be way easier for the consumer because everybody would have access to your product and everybody would want to ensure that you buy it from their platform.
Right.
On the other hand, the second category would be product innovation, wherein all this data that will be available to both, as Sue said, it's a level playing field. So banks will get access to more data, whereas the other third party provider category, which is like a huge category involving fintechs, tech giants and whatnot. So with this new information, there will be a lot of product innovations and new ways to serve the consumers better and give them more control overall, and definitely will be a huge impact on financial inclusion. And when we say financial inclusion, it's taken to this whole era wherein people don't have access to digital services. It's not about that. It's about really having a choice in an accessible way.
Yeah. Can I give an example of something based on what you said? Like when we started Fathom Foresight, like FGS was banked with a different bank, with a different accounting platform. So this has all been brand new for Jeet and I to kind of be the small business experiencing what it's like to try and get what you need from a bank. And this is less about them now, but imagine open banking where, you know, if I decide I want to share my data with my business bank, in this case, it's RBC. I've never been a customer, so this has been kind of an interesting experience. But then what the bank can ask me in open banking as a business customer is, great, we'll share your data and it'll be done through a secure connection and you can revoke that at any time. Also too, there'll be some liability that will transfer with the sharing of that data. But in reverse, the bank RBC could say, are you okay? Would you like to share data with us? They've got to give me some reason why I would want to do it. But imagine if I did that and now they have the ability to look at how many voices do I have outstanding? Who are my customers? Like open banking really changes things. And today, Square and Shopify and Clover and all of these other players in the small business space, they can do that. Like Shopify launched Shopify Capital, which is a working capital product for their merchant customers in 13 days from start to finish. And in part, they did that because there's no regulation preventing them from doing that. So that's one thing in their favor. It wasn't about origination and the credit risk policy, all the other things that the banks have to deal with. They just needed to look into somebody's Shopify balance account to determine, you know, are you credit worthy? And that's a huge advantage. And so with open banking, the banks can do that too. And we'll see. I mean, we hope they do.
There has been a lot of partnership between financial incumbents and startups that we've seen. But then what kind of other opportunities do you see emerging in this intersection between fintech startups and financial incumbents?
Well, I would say every single kind of fintech, financial innovation, financial industry category, like be it lending, investment, insurance, equity, crowdfunding, why not, right? So investment, crypto, banks haven't really dipped their toes yet in a major way in that space yet. So I think there's a opportunity in every single space, and there needs to be a theme there, which so far it has been to, like, tech has enabled the back end of the banks so far. We are yet to see in a major way where fintechs and banks partner at an equal footing and both of them sort of go with the market where it's a co-owned or co-launching of a product in a big, big way, which is changing. So I think as I said, this theme needs to come up where we see equal footing for both the players, because each one has a value to add to the table.
What about a focus on Web3 and crypto? How do you see financial institutions responding to this trend that's happening right now?
I think the banks are opportunistic right now, both in terms of fintech activity and Web 3.0 or DeFi or crypto. Like, I think, as you can expect, any existing company that has an established business is going to want to say, oh, something's happening in the market. I need to know about it. Then I need to maybe act on it by preventing it or by, I think they're in this stage right now where they're looking at, like, our investors want access to alternative types of investments. We should understand crypto more. And it's still very much hype.
I agree. I think there are a lot of other industries that are probably will mature faster with Web 3.0 and metaverse. Financial institutions, I'm going to correct myself there, because we have a lot of NFT activity already happening in Canada. Financial institutions will not be the one, I think, who will be playing a major part initially into this. Because I think the very gist of DeFi is that it's decentralized. Right. And that's too risky for banks to get into. And there are a lot of regulations into place which are going to, like, I just don't see that happening anytime really soon. But they will be definitely kind of looking at how they can offer some alternative options to their consumers through their apps. And I think that's where partnerships with fintechs and digital investment platforms and cryptocurrency exchanges would come into play. But Web3, metaverse in a major way for financial institutions, I think there's a way to go there.
Kind of going back to Fathom Foresight, how do you see, the company grow, and what are the biggest challenges that you guys have seen so far?
So this is my second company. And I would say for the first one, after 6 years, we were at our peak with 35 employees, and we won a bunch of awards, and we were like on McLean's list of one of the fastest growing companies. But I think what Jeet and I are trying to do is going to be even harder, only because now, instead of providing services, which, in the services business, you can go out and sell something and deliver it, and that, instantly you have revenue. With the platform that we've built and have launched and are launching, additional products on, our model is a monthly recurring revenue model. And so this is the if we get it right, then hopefully we'll be able to scale it, not just, sort of only even within Canada, but beyond. But that's been harder. Yeah. It's a whole new animal. Like, I have so much appreciation and respect for, entrepreneurs and founders who start a company and build a product and put a bunch of money into it. And I don't know a single entrepreneur who doesn't take a massive risk when they do that, right? It's because, you might fail. And if, like, it's a whole different thing when you're failing as an innovation person inside a big company, but you're still leaving every day with a paycheck. But so I think we're going to succeed and probably grow faster even than FGS did, because we will have a product at the foundation driving our business. But time will tell. I mean, it's early days for us. Like we started the company in, let's say September of last year. Now we had like that headwind of FGS kind of pushing us into it. So we weren't starting cold, but yeah, we're not even at, what are we at now? 5 months or four months, six, something. Anyway, we can't count. Yeah. But I mean, we have big ambitions and amazing clients. Like we have two of the big consulting firms in Canada as clients. We have one of the big banks. We have one of the largest fintech companies in the world. Like, it's pretty exciting, actually, but we got a lot of work to do.
Definitely. I mean, it's always challenging to start up and kind of continue with the scalability of the company. And just considering you both have had such amazing careers so far in the fintech space, I just would love to hear your one piece of advice for anyone who's trying to kind of enter this industry within Canada or just anywhere in the world, but yeah, specifically within Canada.
Well, my one piece of advice would be, I think now is the time to, you know, take a risk. Fintech that is, you know, direct to the market, like direct to consumer, or direct to small business, because the world is just opening up, right? From a competition standpoint, I think it was a bigger risk, you know, five years ago. One of our Canadian challenger banks, Coho, just announced a raise, a pretty substantial raise today of money, which I'm kind of glad to see because we haven't heard from them in a while. And it you know, you worry about, in our business anyway, you worry about, we don't want our Canadian, you know, fintechs to fail. And that is clearly not happening. They're doing really well. But there was probably some rocky moments there, right? And so I would say, you know, there's lots of runway for fintech entrepreneurship and growth in the competitive, you know, consumer and business space.
I think, Sue, you gave the advice to fintech founders. I'm going to give it to people who are trying to get into fintech industry as working for a fintech. Or actually for even for banks, I think just pick an area of expertise and really go deep into it. You won't be out of job. There's so much demand right now for people who actually understand what's happening in the space. And be it from technology-wise, market-wise, product-wise, risk-wise, AI, it's just crazy how much the gap in talent is right now versus the demand for it. So pick a space and just like go deep, and you will always have a job. It's that kind of situation right now, and it's actually a very good time to work in the fintech space at this point.
This conversation has been amazing. Thank you both so much for taking out the time today and speaking with us, and we really look forward to seeing what Fathom Foresight does in the future. And all the best to you both.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for tuning in to the FinHub podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn to get the latest updates and information about the topics covered during our episodes. Don't forget to head over to your favorite podcast platform to subscribe to our channel. Until next time.